this is awesome. You know, finding some of the incredible, exciting innovations that are happening today, and again, how those are affecting the speed that we're providing positive services to the world. For me, it's a joy as an engineer, but it's also a joy as a human being, because it showcases the incredible impact we're doing as a community, transforming our world.
Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to the 39th episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. I was delighted to welcome to the podcast Eduardo Kasner, the technology, strategy, and innovation leader of the worldwide One Commercial Partner team at Microsoft. Eduardo joins the podcast for a lively discussion on what he's seeing during this rapid digital transformation and how he and the team think through and address the key areas where partners need the most support, guidance, and enablement. It's a rich business and technical discussion and points to the work Microsoft is doing to help partners accelerate and push through the change. There's a lot of great information here, and I've provided links to many great resources in the show notes. As with each of my episodes, I appreciate your support. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell your friends about it. And I'd love your feedback. Please provide a review or drop me a line at vincem@cloudwaypartners.net. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Eduardo, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Vince. Truly appreciate it.
I'm excited to have you on today to share with our listeners your role at Microsoft in the OCP, or One Commercial Partner Organization, how the new organization is helping partners transform, where you see the puck going in this age of rapid digital transformation. So welcome.
No, I really appreciate you inviting me. This is truly exciting times for all of us, Microsoft, and the transition that we're making in the market, as well as it's an exciting time for our customers and our partner ecosystem.
It is an amazing time, and all of my guests this year have talked about just how fast things are transforming and things are changing, faster than anyone has expected, in fact. So, Eduardo, you are a leader in the worldwide OCP organization, and you work for Gabriela Schuster. So you've been front and center in this era of change and transformation. First, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about how you see your team's charter supporting technology transformation.
Absolutely. Well, I lead the strategy and innovation team, and for about a year and a half, what we've been doing is we've been trying to figure out, through not only talking to analysts and customers and talking to our partner ecosystem extensively, we've tried to learn what is it that blocks the growth of our partners. What are the services that are required the most? What is the talent required to deliver those services? What are the best practices to grow the business? And what is the best as well practices, but processes to deliver tremendous satisfaction on these age of transformation for our businesses and for our customers' business. If you allow me to continue, what's really interesting is that we discovered that there were 3 to 4 things that were the most troublesome, impactful, purposeful that we could do to enable our partner ecosystem. The first was to understand the skills gap and to understand how to address, how to hire, well, first, how to locate and identify, then how to attract, hire, onboard, train, and retain talent in this tremendous barrage of technology that we're getting every couple of months. A year and a half ago, nobody was talking about AI. 5 years ago, cybersecurity was, or cyber threat was, a big deal, but not a board of trustees conversation as it is today. The second is, how are you becoming profitable as a partner in this ecosystem? What services should you provide? What's the interrelation of the services? How do you write a successful statement of work? How do you detect the customer spaces? How do you compete? How do you differentiate? How do you grow? As well as, how do you develop the practice? From starting a practice in a new technology, a new service, and a new business type, to how do you develop it and grow And finally, how do you optimize it? And the last one is, how do you find and build a reputation in a market where nobody wants to listen to a pitch? Nobody wants to receive an email, right? How do you actually build a name for yourself, differentiate, reach to the right person that has the right opportunity that can give you the next boost and next opportunity to differentiate and provide great service? As you can see, the summary is those four things, right? How to address the skills gap, how to understand profitability in this new world, how to develop the practices to achieve that profitability, and how do you create a reputation, build on it, and detect the next opportunity, and how that next opportunity can propel you to the one after that.
So let's dive in on each of those. There's some really compelling topics here for our listeners. Let's start first with the skills gap.
Absolutely. I've been very passionate about this for years. So to embed a little bit of a potentially different question, I've been in charge of multiple roles in Microsoft. I've been in charge of training, growing, landing, and managing multiple technical roles for cloud. And I've been working on the cloud since probably 6-7 years. So I started on this mad spinning wheel a little bit before most.
That's when we called it BPOS, I think, back in the day, right?
Oh, red dog, red shoes, red this, red that. It's been a lot of stuff. Yeah. But I can tell you, when everybody tells me how fast is this thing moving, I said, I don't know. I lost track because I've been on the train for too long. For me, this almost seems natural now, which is not okay. But if you understand, the biggest problem that we have is that we're trying to solve an old problem with what would seem like a brand new identification of solutions. Talent did not just spur. Nobody just hired college degree people that recently graduated who have 15 years of experience managing production, understanding how to do proper testing, understanding how to do deployment of complex projects, understanding how to set up a PMO office and the difference between project and program management, understanding how to manage complex RFPs, RFIs, RFQs, certification compliance, etc. So talent is a big issue because the ones that have solved it have realized that it is not a hiring of a brand new skilled labor force. It is actually building a reskilling engine that enables new blood to mix with experienced blood and to constantly embed what we've learned from the past of how to do it right and how to do it faster. And so there's a lot of really interesting motions that we've done on that, whether it be online courses, whether it be publication of job descriptions and playbooks, whether it be alliances like the one we have with Pluralsight for free courses, publication and faster maturity and evolution of our certification exam.
You know, and I think about the fact that this transformation is happening so fast that the skills that I have today are not the skills I need a year from now. So how do you keep current? You mentioned some of these tools and resources, but how do I, as a student or somebody in the industry, stay current or progress in my skills?
Well, I would gladly disagree with what you just said. I think that you're going to have an evolution of your skills, but I don't think that your skills are not relevant anymore. I'm not sure that that's true. Production is production. Formal deployment of a project is still formal deployment of a project. The method of doing it is shifting. The method is transforming. But the experience and the understanding of how to do it is not. So therefore, you may have to learn a new language, right? You may have to go from one tool stack to another, from one language to another, right? But it is not necessarily true that you're going to have to let go of all your knowledge. Therefore, skilling has become pretty much three things. One, it has become an ongoing activity. It can no longer be that you do it on Saturday mornings on your free time or Friday nights from 6 to midnight. That cannot happen anymore. Those are the people that are getting completely left behind. Readiness and your update of technology has to be a third, a fourth, a fifth of your week. Every week. Every week you have to stay sharp. You have to learn new. You have to practice different. You have to do a different lab, different hands-on. take a different course, whether it be a university-style course on the web, a MOOC, massive open online course, whether it be a webcast, whether it be listening to a community call, more important, whether it be participating on a meetup or leading a hands-on lab or a hackathon. So those who learn the best are the ones who teach. People who are experts are not the ones who have spent 15 years doing something anymore. It's the ones that have learned and mastered their ability to understand, build a course, and teach it to others, and be very agile on it. So your ability to transpose and grow and learn from others and participate in a community is what makes you an expert, not your tremendous depth in one single technology.
How, as an employer, do I have to think differently about that then, in terms of allowing time for training and for those people to train others?
You have to respect train the trainers programs. You have to foment and enable mentorship programs. You have to compensate and recognize informal leadership. You have to enable collaboration as a method of the team building and as a basis of the success of your team. And so all that are methods of you to create and foster an environment where people not only desire to learn, but understand that if they don't learn, they're out of a job. Now you could say, okay, what is Microsoft doing about all this? So what we're doing is we're doing a whole bunch of stuff. And the reason is because everybody learns differently. So what we do is we provide our same channels of communication, which are blogs and our websites and docs.microsoft.com, which is a great new website for a whole bunch of documentation. And we still have TechNet and we still have Channel 9 and Microsoft Virtual Academy. So all the really snaps and tidbits and documentation, super important. A lot of people still learn via documentation. Second, if you want to learn online with two-hour courses, go to Pluralsight. You can go to MBA. And we have a ton of free courses there. Third, you want to take deeper courses, then you go to edx.org. That's basically, I think it's .org or .edu. I'm going to mess it up. I apologize.
Okay. I'm going to ask you for the links for our show notes after this podcast as well for our listeners.
Yes. So EDX, which is a website for learning for the massive open online courses. And we have published there a ton of courses. You can take courses there, audit them, take the full course. And if you want the certification, the certificate costs money, but you can take the course for free. Tremendous amount of knowledge there. Then we're going to continue to do events. We're going to continue to do certifications. There's a massive amount of people that still like and learn via certifications. And there's a power to the exam because, you know what, you set a date and then you got to learn by that date.
Right.
So it's also a really good psychological effect for people to say, oops, by that date, I got to read the book, do the practice and learn, right? And sure, why not? And then last but not least, we're really encouraging and providing a whole bunch of forums where people can do meetups, where people can get hackathons, and we're doing it across all our technologies. There is a wide, wide, wide spectrum of events, of courses, of online, of reading, of material, of certifications, so that you can choose whichever track is easier for you and which one is best for you at your different stages of learning.
This is really great, and we'll provide links to this in the show notes. So let's move on to practice development. Tell our listeners a little bit about what that means.
My philosophy is that you can't learn from yourself. We can't teach partners how to be successful because we're not a partner. We are the persons, the people building the software and the platform. So what my team does is we listen. We listen like crazy. We listen to our partners in the sense that we interview the top 30 to 50 in each space of how they are successful, how they started a practice, how they grew a practice, and how they optimize a practice. So those are the three stages. We're trying to keep it super simple. Again, you're starting a new AI practice, a new security practice, a new et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. Or you're growing it, or you're optimizing it, as in you have a successful one, but you want to make it better, right? So those are the three stages, very simple. And what we do is we interview between 30 and 50 partners per each practice development playbook initiative that we start. And so I'll go with the security one as an example, which is the last playbook that we published. We interviewed a whole bunch of partners, like I said, between 30 and 50. Then we did a survey. Survey as in 300 to 1,000 partners. And we not only understand by the first 30 to 50, how did they build their business, grow their business, their best practices on the business and technical side, We also, through the survey, understand what talent they needed, what services they sold, which type of customers they found, what was the most relevant success factors, the talent, where would they attract it from. This goes into from how to detect the market, how to define your business offerings, how to define the statement of works, how to define the sales, to the job description of the roles you're going to need for this practice specifically, and then how to hire, train them, and onboard them. And then how to build your offerings, how to build a statement of works, how to bill for it, how to price it. Like you're understanding, this is as technical as it is business. They're 200-page books, and you can consume them two ways. You can go to aka.ms/practice-playbooks, or you can go to partner.microsoft.com, which we lovingly refer to as MPN, or Microsoft Partner Network. And in there, you're going to read the content of the playbooks because the content of the playbooks is dispersed throughout the website. So A or B. But the point is, these are really Bibles, manuals, franchise books of how to build a successful practice inside of the Microsoft ecosystem and platform and be successful based on the success of others, not on what we think. We then validate these books that we build and content, which is full of links, full of how to operate, how to navigate our programs, how to navigate our benefits, everything, with another 100 partners and about 30 to 50 key stakeholders inside of Microsoft. So these things are tremendously validated, and we update them every 6 months.
So we'll provide links for all of those in the show notes, both those sets of links. I didn't know those existed, candidly. So this is great information for our listeners and for our partners out there who are looking to build those practices.
Absolutely. And if you allow me the small advertisement, we have playbooks for cloud infrastructure and management, cloud application development, data and analytics, mobility, security. And we're building two more, which will be published soon, probably in the next 3-4 months. One on cloud migration and one on artificial intelligence and cognitive services.
I'm sure our listeners will value that. Thank you very much, Eduardo. You know, you talked about profitability as well, right? And this is one of the, I know this is one area where partners struggled with the transformation. You also mentioned that was an area that your team focuses in on.
So there's two aspects to this. One I already talked about, the other one I haven't. About 2 years ago, before I came into the team had already existed and it had published some great books with IDC on the profitability story with the Microsoft platform. This ebooks, which were really great content, focused on how to differentiate, it was a cloud opportunity, et cetera, et cetera. We are revamping all that work. So we're going to, again, refocus, but now on the digital transformation story. Mm-hmm. We're building all the profitability story, but I love the how. Right? I mean, for me, the why and the what is fantastic, but once the why and the what are defined, I need a how. So for me, the how is the practice development playbooks. And they include the profitability story. What we're doing with the new series of ebooks for profitability is we're aggregating, extracting, and expanding on the profitability models. But once you read those, the real call to action is now grab a playbook, develop a service, develop a practice, and be super successful delivering those services. And that's how you actually enact and realize the profitability. Right? Because just telling you you're going to be super profitable if you differentiate, verticalize, and give an AI practice. But then the immediate next question is going to be how? And that's where the playbooks come in. Right? So it's really complementary work if you notice.
I do. And you talked about rising above the noise, I guess is the way I would put it, right? How do the partners become discoverable to the customer ecosystem? Yeah. So how are you guiding that discussion?
I guess there's two things that I want to talk about from the complete different angles, right? So I'm going to come right to left and left to right on this. I don't think it is how do you find the next customer and differentiate. Is at some point in time, you're going to start a practice. And again, through the playbooks, through the work we do with the profitability, through the research that we do, through the best practices that we gather, we do provide tremendous guidance on which type of customer, as in which role, where in the enterprise, and what type of service. And then what compounds those services? So what are the actual services that get sold? When you look for let's talk about data and analytics. So when you talk about data and analytics, one of the projects be data modernization. Who's the customer that buys that? What are the type of projects that they buy? What does the statement of work look like? What are the services that your people would have to provide as an SI, as an IS, as an ISV, or as an MSP? How do you differentiate? What are the key differentiated services or value adds that people look at it? I'll give you an example. One of the services that get the most attention when sold as a data platform is identity and identity management. Mm-hmm. And who would know, right? But this came out of our own learnings. If you notice, like I said, left to right, it is how do you detect who you go sell this? What do they buy the most? What's the average revenue, margin, profitability story for those sales? What's the statement of work? Which type of resources do you need to deliver those services? And what are the conditions of satisfaction? That's in the playbooks. Second, we're also working to rethink and renew some of our thoughts on not only competencies, but the solution catalog for OCP. So that means, how do you build your services? How do we co-sell with you? How do we market with you? We build all the IP into the playbooks and skills initiatives, et cetera, as well as we influence the programs that Microsoft is evolving and creating, whether it be through pilots or through just influencing existing services and programs.
Talk to me a little bit about competencies, because we had Toby Richards on an earlier episode, and he had been getting feedback when he first came into role about gold competency. And he was hearing from customers that ensure that the partners that are gold are really gold. What's your viewpoint on the competencies today?
So we're doing a lot of thinking on this, and we've already started a couple of pilots. So I'm happy to say that Toby's team is doing a lot of incredible work on how do we complement, how do we enhance, and what is the future of competencies. You're going to see some very interesting things coming up in this year's Ignite as we progress forward. It does have implications on our co-sell capabilities as well, or relationship with our partners. So this is a big topic. Let me limit myself to say that there's a lot of work that my team is doing through the research that we do, but also through listening to partners on not only how they define what a quality service is required or requires to be delivered, but also how do we measure it. So we're doing a lot of work on those two.
So making sure that the competencies are relevant and measurable.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And also, I'm trying to say in a non-distinct manner, that in a very clear way, that my team is very involved in thinking with Toby's team through a lot of listening channels. How do we want to evolve this? How do we really make a difference in enabling our partners to grow? Because for me, all these things have only one purpose, that our partners are more successful on the Microsoft platform and they find more methods to be profitable, but also more methods to deliver satisfaction to our joint customers.
So this has been an incredible year of transformation, right? I keep hearing from everyone I speak to that it's happened faster than most even expected. What do you believe are the top challenges that the partners are facing during this time?
Wow, that's a big one. I think the first one is partners have, I may come back for a second to my three key tenets that I mentioned at the beginning, but then I'll go into others. I just don't want to sound like a broken record, right?
Well, it reinforces it though. I mean, to go back to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So one is, I think every time I talk to partners and people hear me sound like a broken record in this one, they're having quite a challenge on finding, attracting, training, retaining talent. Talent is a big, big issue right now for everybody. It's not only because the roles are mutating so fast, it's because we've never had such fast innovation, rotation, requirement in that space. That's not a space that was innovative for years. You were a sysadmin, that's it. You know, it wasn't like, oh my God, it's disruptive. Right now, this is disruptive. It's complex. It's evolving of innovation, experience, and ability. And those are disrupting the industry in a second.
You know, the whole point around big data, AI, machine learning, these are areas that were not touched 5 years ago. So, you know, again, going back to the point, where do you get those skills, right? How do you get the right people with the right skills to support that?
The skills evolution doesn't just imply small architectural decisions that you don't have to live with. And so talent has deep implications on so many other aspects. And so disrupting and causing that space to be so difficult right now and being such a hard equation to solve has led my team to think that we're actually starting some work on building some playbooks and some guidance for how our partners can go do exactly that. Identify, attract, hire, onboard, train, and retain talent. So we're thinking of building a playbook just on that. We're right now on the verge of that.
I think it's an excellent idea, by the way, given the conversations I've had with partners.
Second, the profitability story is harder than ever. People that are used to getting margins of double digits are getting single digit. People who are getting single digit are getting small single digits. People that are getting small single digits are getting decimals of profitability.
Right.
And so our business models are getting decimated by the month. As in, a new service comes out, a new partner comes out brilliant with a new idea, and customer loyalty is at an all-time low. And so helping partners how to be profitable, how to differentiate, how to distinguish themselves, how to detect markets, how to attract markets, how to build a reputation, which are the last three things that we talked about. Those are very complicated topics that I find myself having a lot of conversations with ISVs, MSIs, and MSPs. Hey, I'm talking to ISVs who build their whole platform on a specific cloud, and then they're coming to me and saying, can we attract a different market if we go with you?
Right.
They're not saying I don't want to do A. They're saying if I go to B, can I make more money? Can I address a different market? Can I touch in a different geography? Can I address a different segment or a different vertical? It's crazy interesting because they're understanding that it is, if I sell pies, can I also sell coffee? It's not A or B.
No, but I get it. I get it because, you know, there's some view that each of the three hyperscalers has a little bit different slant or business model or customer model, if you will.
And by the way, nobody that I've met so far is a single anything. Nobody is just an ISV. Nobody is just an SI. Nobody is just an MSP. And while we all know this and we've said it forever, it's crazy how it's happening more and more and more. You go to a customer and they say, great that you provide me a software solution or a platform for me to build. Do it for me. And some people just say, build it for me. But a lot of people are saying, no, manage it for me. So go into full SaaS in a minute. And it's a completely different business model as an investment model. So you got to go back to the board. The partner ecosystem is evolving, getting pulled apart and being challenged in many different ways. And being successful is, I wouldn't say harder. I would just say as or more complex than it's always been. But finding how to be successful is one thing. Finding how to grow, different thing. You can find a good niche that you can be successful. But in order not to get disrupted and see where the ball is going and be able to be there, that's super complex nowadays. Because things are going so crazy fast.
So Eduardo, you've been doing work to inform and enable the partner ecosystem. You've actually written a book, Enterprise Cloud Strategy. I was hoping maybe you could share with our listeners a little bit about that ebook, and I know it's available through Microsoft. And maybe you can take our listeners through what examples and case studies and how it could help enable them.
Yeah, I'll give a brief overview. It was actually not written for our partners necessarily. What's interesting is I've always believed that you have to stay sharp. And stay sharp means that you talk to customers, to partners, to your employees, that you talk to a 360 all the time. So every week, I participate in two or three customer meetings, conversations, same as projects, same as with partners, regardless of what I do in the week. And so through the years, I've amassed a whole bunch of learning and stories of how people are evolving into the cloud, because I started very early when the cloud was very young. And so one story that I got fascinated by was how Microsoft IT started to build their strategy of how to move to the cloud. The reason is because our CEO at the time told Microsoft IT, you don't have any more budget for hardware. From now on, you're going to move everything to the cloud. And they said, oops, that's a big problem, right? How do we do this? Because it was one day to the next. And so they've migrated close to 60,000 VMs to the cloud.
Wow.
Right? 60,000 VMs. And this is every version of every operating system you can imagine. and every version of every database you can imagine, not just Microsoft properties. And so I became good friends with the CTO of Microsoft IT at that time. With Barry Briggs, who was the CTO of MSIT at that time, decided to write a book on it. It was called Enterprise Cloud Strategy. This happened about a year and a half ago. And we wrote the book, and the book has the basis of how Microsoft IT did the approach, strategy, and migration. But also, I had already taken this because of my previous job leading the cloud architecture solution community worldwide in role. I had taken this to hundreds of customers and how they did their cloud migration. So we aggregated all the experience of literally hundreds of customers and the story of MSIT, and we put it together into that book. So it's a very amicable, short book on purpose. It is very heavily focused on the why, the what, and some of the hows. And it really addresses the how do you approach in an enterprise class way the project of migrating to the cloud. I'll repeat myself. Enterprise class IT environment.
And I know you come out with a second edition of the book as well. And
exactly.
I'm sure we provide a link in our show notes for that too.
Yep. So we realized a year and something later that we had to add a couple of important things that had come up. One was revamped the security and compliance, because a couple of new things came into existence, like GDPR. Perhaps it was a good idea to talk about all the great work that we had seen customers as well as MSIT do on more environments, do on AI. And so we updated the book and came up with a second edition. So super excited to have that out. It's had over 300,000 downloads. It's become quite popular.
Wow.
Which I know it's mind-boggling if you ask, because we never dreamt it was going to be that big, and it surprised us. And you know, it's awesome to hear when somebody comes to you and says, it helped me formulate my approach on how to go about cloud. So I'll tell you something, the hardest thing to do in some of these projects is, where do I start? How do I think about this? How do I structure the team, the process, the strategy, the migration, the philosophy? How do I convince the team to get through the hurdles? Because once you have the engine going, it goes. But how do you set up the engine? Which type of engine to set up? That's what the book addresses. Really, really interesting stuff.
And you have another book coming out soon as well.
Yep. With a great partner and with Barry again, we are building and about to publish a new book on it's full of I won't say digital transformation, but let me just say it the way I like to say it, a full of business transformation stories of how companies in almost every vertical and for almost every reason, so whether it be to differentiate, to enhance and empower their employees, to grow their customer bases, to provide more services, to grow their customer base and reach and capability, as well as how to engage with their society and become more compliant, etc. So it is really a rich book full of examples and catalogs of how technology has disrupted, evolved, and evolutionized their business model. So it's a little tiny bit less technical, it's not void of technical. I would not allow that. I believe that the how has to be there to some degree. Yep. It's really an account of why digital transformation in a very practical way, again, in a very easy readable format.
When that book comes out, I'm going to commit to have you back on the podcast and maybe Barry on as well. We can talk through the book in greater detail.
Love it. Love it.
So I know we only have a few moments left, but I, as you might know from listening to other episodes, I'd like to focus a little bit on the career journey. And I thought maybe you could tell our listeners about your life experiences and early career and how that prepared you for your spot here in the worldwide OCP organization.
My pleasure. I would say there were three things out of my whole career that I would focus on that actually prepared me for this incredible job and this great opportunity that I have right now. Very early in my career, I ended up managing the outsourcings for 120-something outsourcings back in Mexico. That's where I'm from. And so I managed a lot of outsourcings, and it taught me the incredible importance of social responsibility. As in, that service is not a server, And if that server goes down, then no planes to park the airport in Mexico City. So you're like, okay, not a server, right? Not a server. Or if that piece of hardware goes down, then no credit cards get printed and delivered for this bank. Or if that service across the mainframe or across, back then, that Unix database goes down, then no person gets operated on a hospital because no authorization goes out from an insurance company, right? So that really prepared me for understanding the social responsibility that we have with our platforms and the crazy impact that we have on making a difference in our world. And I have never allowed myself to stay too far from that. Because after you taste the impact of your actions, it's really hard to be distraught from it, to see things as just code or just servants or just some disks. So that's one. The second is coming into Microsoft, I did a couple of jobs where I was leading different roles for the company, whether it be data management, data platform, data transformation, as well as a data center consolidation, the infrastructure roles, and then later on, some of the IaaS, and then some of the application development, and finding how each one of these people thinks different. Lastly, managing some of the roles for big data analytics, AI. And so learning how to manage these people, how they find success, how they learn from each other, how they grow, taught me the humility of listening to others. Everybody has great experience and we all learn from each other. And how can we always find potential in the knowledge, the ability, and the desire to make a change in the world from the person next door? That was the second. And the third was my last role, leading the cloud architecture community, which included a lot of the roles I already mentioned, was staggering. It went from not having anybody to defining the role to hiring over 3,500 cloud architects worldwide.
Wow.
And leading them. And you know, that is just humbling. So finding the humility on how to grow that engine and make it successful, and then understanding the tremendous revolution that cloud has become, is just fascinating. Those three has shaped me well for number one, when I say that I lead the strategy innovation team, it'd be better said that I lead the engine that listens to the success of our partners and tries to better consolidate it, formulate it, and package it so that we can then transmit it to the rest of the community and then learn from each other again.
Yeah, I couldn't think of a greater role, having a partner lens certainly that I have. What is the most fun aspect of the work for you?
Listening to those super cool moments when you hear somebody humbly say, I just created all of the airport services for this country on containers and they're fully resilient. And they say it with such humility, and you're like, you did what? Wait, you actually, and it works? This is awesome. You know, finding some of the incredible, exciting innovations that are happening today, and again, how those are affecting the speed that we're providing positive services to the world. For me, it's a joy as an engineer, but it's also a joy as a human being. Because it showcases the incredible impact we're doing as a community, transforming our world. And I'll tell you something, every single example is more inspiring than the next. And that's what keeps me going and waking up in the morning.
It's an exciting time. It certainly Absolutely. Is. Eduardo, I know we're coming up on time. I would love to have you back. I'm going to invite you back now. But I want to have you back, first of all, when the new book comes out. But also, we should do a checkpoint every so often on this transformation, because it's happening so fast, and having you there to help guide our partners is very valuable to this ecosystem. So I want to thank you for joining today.
Thank you, Vince. Truly appreciate the opportunity and appreciate what you're doing for the community. So thank you for being a voice and for trying to help us communicate with each other better. So appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione, online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on the Ultimate Guide to Partnering.